You're listening to Green Building and Sustainable Development with your host, Kim Shanahan.
Hey, folks. Welcome to Green Building and Sustainable Development. This is your host, Kim Shanahan. Glad you're with us here on this cold and blustery January Saturday. Yeah, the weather kind of took a little turn, but it's okay. And hopefully we'll actually get some precipitation out of this and pack it in the mountains up there. Sure, I'm glad you're with us today. The big news, of course, next week is that our legislature starts its 60-day session. This is the session when all things are on the table, not just financial issues. It starts on Tuesday. And us political wonks look forward to this time. I actually am a registered lobbyist with the Santa Fe Area Home Builders Association, so I pull out my sport coats and my ties and wrap myself up and even get down there occasionally. And it's kind of fun. The more I do it, the more I kind of am learning the ropes of that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of things out there that are really important, not just to the home building industry, but all of what is green. And today, not in the studio, but today on the phone, we have someone who is well-versed in the machinations of the Roundhouse. And, of course, that is the Executive Director of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Alan Oliver. So, Alan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Alan, as I said, you are very well versed in the workings of our state legislature, and that's not an easy thing to get your head around, but you've been at it for a while. So real quick, a little bit about your background before you were working with the Green Chamber of Commerce.
Well, I have to say, anybody who's worked in the Roundhouse, I think would attest that we're all students of the Roundhouse. And so I had the privilege of working as the Deputy Chief of Staff to Kenny Martinez, formerly House Majority Leader, now incoming Speaker. Also had the privilege of working with Diane Dennisch in her office for some time, and then later with former Governor Richardson in his office, and both in running his cabinet and then also over at the Economic Development Office and helping push, in particular helping kind of lead off on a lot of the legislation that we ran out of economic development, JTIP, high wage jobs tax credits, and a number of other things.
Well, Alan, from that kind of a resume, you would think that you are a rather grizzled veteran, but you're not. You're a relatively young guy, so you must have got started pretty soon, right out of school, with the politics in New Mexico, I'm guessing.
You could say that. I think I would just say it's probably not that long a time, but it's more of a, it's a very, you learn a lot really fast if you would like to get legislation through. And you know, actually having been in a couple of meetings this morning and talking with some of the real true veterans out there, it's, you know, these are some folks who have seen a whole lot more than I have. And I just, you know, have to emphasize, I'm still learning but I do find it a really, it's a fascinating process to see.
It is. And as I said earlier, the more I do it, the more I enjoy it, actually. And certainly having you as a mentor has been a really valuable thing for me. You know, it's interesting, Alan, your background definitely is in economic development, and that certainly suits you well as the executive director of a business chamber of commerce, albeit the Green Chamber of Commerce. So obviously you must have had an interest in all things sustainable and green and energy efficiency and that sort of stuff too for the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce when it formed a couple of years ago to seek you out and make you that first executive director. Would that be true?
Yeah. My background at economic development was working primarily with renewable energy companies, recruiting them into the state, as well as energy efficiency initiatives, worked very closely. We had a great green economy manager named Brendan Miller, and he did this great green jobs report and helped run a green jobs cabinet, which I was later a part of. And so this was a really heavy emphasis for how the Recovery Act funds were distributed. As there was a heavy emphasis and attempt to really do things, good things around building clean energy grids, about incentivizing energy efficiency, keeping the strong incentives out there for renewable energy production. And so I had an opportunity to work on a lot of those things, which was a great privilege.
Well, let's jump right into some of the priorities that the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce has determined are going to be their priorities for this session. And all folks, in full disclosure, let me just also say that I am on the state board of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. They talked me into being the treasurer, which is kind of a stretch for those who know me and my financial acumen. But we're also very much involved in trying to create a Santa Fe chapter through the work of our new executive director in Santa Fe, Glenn Schiffbauer. So I am very much involved in the Green Chamber of Commerce and clearly have been privileged to make the overlap and the connection between the home building industry in the state of New Mexico and the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. And Alan, let's talk about a couple of the two top priorities that really do focus on that overlap between the home building industry and the Green Chamber.
Sounds great. And Kim, said very publicly, Kim has been a great asset for us, and so grateful to have his help. So the top priorities that we've had for the Green Chamber, but the one is going to be is familiar to your listeners, the Home Buyer's Tax Credit. This is a bill that we ran last year, and this was to provide a tax credit back to folks who buy homes that are newly constructed that have a 60 HERS rating or better, going up all the way up to a zero net energy home, and that they would be getting a $4,000, $6,000, or $8,000 tax credit. But for us, the kind of the big bottom line around this bill is that it's a jobs bill, and we all see the news around our economy, and seeing how the unemployment rates are really high, and the construction sector is especially high, with numbers anywhere between 20% and 40%, depending on what estimate you look at, and that in order to get our economy standing up, we really need to get the construction sector back up. And we feel there's a way to do it that's a win-win, where energy-efficient construction and these new jobs. And our estimate is that if this bill was to get passed all the way through and get signed into law, it would create, over the course of 3 years, roughly 4,700 new jobs. And so we think that this is a good bill, it's a smart bill to pass at this time. So that would be a top priority bill that certainly would have a positive impact on the green building sector. The second bill is going to be very familiar to your listeners, and I know that you've been a part of this bill, but the bill that Senator Wirth put forward several years ago, the Sustainable Building Tax Credit, which also incentivizes the construction both on the residential and commercial side of green buildings, and is something that's been a real, very successful tax credit. And then it has essentially helped shift the market in a very positive way towards more sustainable building construction. And so that's, from our viewpoint, that is it's an awfully important bill to the market and to keep that sector going and growing.
Hang on a second. Let me just take a few minutes and just sort of focus on those. Now, the Sustainable Building Tax Credit is not necessarily a new bill. It's really just to extend the the bill. It had a sunset as part of it that would make the appropriations end at the end of this year, 2013. And Senator Wirth is seeking a 10-year extension. There'll probably be some horse trading on that, and it's unlikely that we'll get everything we want in terms of that 10 years, but we're feeling pretty optimistic that, maybe 5 years is actually something even this administration could support. Isn't that kind of what you've been hearing?
That is what I've been hearing indirectly. Again, this is a renewal. This is a good tax credit. It's been on the books. It's proven. It's got a long track record. And so it's a matter of, and I'd say it's as simple as, this is a big assistance to the, to the construction sector. And last thing we want to be doing is pulling away from helping this construction sector. And we need to, keep this in there and keep it in place.
Right now.
So yeah, that is what I've been hearing. And I think it has, I think it's going to have some really good support, because I think it is widely recognized how important this is to the sector.
Now, of course, folks, there's no guarantee in anything that ever gets introduced in the Roundhouse, and that doesn't mean that we can rest on our laurels. That also means that we very likely we're going to need some support on that, and then we should all stay tuned to both the Green Chamber and the Home Builders Association in case we need you, in case we need you to get out there in front of a committee as it's working its way through the process. Alan, we've only got a couple minutes more in this segment, but back to the Home Buyers Energy Efficiency Tax Credit. You know, we almost got that thing done last year, and I think all of us were surprised at the bipartisan support it had, how quickly it was flying through the legislature. It was only a 30-day session. We got it introduced in the last 2 weeks of the session, so we only had 2 weeks to even educate some legislators on it. But that thing moved pretty quick, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It was, and I think it was something where the leadership recognized how important the bill was. And it was able. There was a lot of reaching across the aisle, and I'll say quite simply, the home builders had a very important role there. They, when you have home builders and folks, businesses, you know, essentially coming in and going to their local legislator and saying, this is something that is going to help my business and help me keep employing people in the construction sector. Legislators listen. They recognize that importance, and that's why it did so well. One note to recognize this year is that we have there is a surplus, and that gives. And last year, when we were looking at this, it was a very tight budget, and it was a very tight time frame that we're not looking at kind of new ideas.
Right. Hey, Alan, I got to interrupt you. I want to come back and focus on this a little bit, but Gino's giving me the signal that we got to wrap this segment up. So stay tuned, folks. We're going to come back with Alan Oliver, Executive Director of the Green Chamber of Commerce. We're going to follow up some more conversation on that bill. Stay tuned.
Saying don't worry about a thing this morning. Smile with the rising sun. Three little birds beach by my doorstep.
Hey folks, welcome back. This is Kim, your host. This is Green Building Sustainable Development, and it's a cold and blustery Saturday. It's a good time to be sitting in the house getting ready for that first NFL playoff game to start at about 2:30, right after the show ends. So you can continue to listen to your AM radio dial, and then you can switch it over to visuals, which is what I'm going to be doing. How about you, Alan? Are you a football guy?
I am a football guy, although my game's on Sunday. so I'm looking for getting all the chores done today so that I can kick back and watch a good game, hopefully.
I know. 2 days of NFL football. That's pretty cool. So, Alan, before the break, we were talking about the Home Buyers Energy Efficiency Tax Credit and how remarkable it was in its path last year in a two-week time frame that we had. Now we got 60 days. But it really, its genesis started with a local and international icon, Mr. Ed Masria. And a little bit about the history between you and the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce and how the merging of our thoughts produced that bill.
Basically, it was a interesting conversation. Early on, and New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce is a relatively new organization. We're now into our third year, and what we had kept hearing from legislators is, we really need some good jobs bills, and we need something where it's a win-win around all the way around, and it's something that the legislature, can do and implement and see a quick impact. And so we brought that very broad question to Ed Masria of Architecture 2030, who's certainly a incredibly well-known, well-respected, as you say, icon, both in Santa Fe and internationally. And he came back with this idea and setting up this essentially what is a stimulus program, and we've been kind of running with it ever since. And he did the economic analysis behind it, and then we actually during this last break went back and did a second economic analysis, trying to program in even newer New Mexico economic data, so that when we go to the legislature, we're able to lay out the case with very specific New Mexico numbers. So that they can feel confident that if they pass it, this is is going to help.
Well, and I think that's why it got the traction that it did, because ultimately it is a jobs bill. New Mexico ranks 50th in the nation in terms of job growth. In fact, we've had negative job growth where other states are finally starting to add jobs. So, gosh, you would think, Alan, that this might even be more ripe than it was last year.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what's really clear is that we're going to be dealing with a recession longer than most of the surrounding states. And the fact that we haven't seen the economic growth, we haven't seen the recruitment, we haven't we've seen all the economic indicators going the wrong way. And I'm hoping that this means that the legislature is going to be just really ready for some new ideas and ready to try something that that's, yes, new, but something that we believe very strongly is going to work. You know, this is a responsible approach because it is set up as a three-year plan. Stand up the construction sector over the course of 3 years, and then the tax credit itself would sunset away. And from we think is a real responsible approach, but also good for the economy, kind of good all the way around, if you will.
Well, you know, and a lot of people think and they hear tax credit and they think that's money out the door. That's public money, taxpayers' money that's been collected and it's just going out the door. But the point that Ed really has been trying to make, and I think we've all agreed that it's sound economic analysis, is that it's money out the door, but it only goes out the door after taxes have been collected on the new construction that occurs. And then beyond that, of course, we have new homes that are going to be paying property taxes forever and ever and ever. And so ultimately, it's at worst, it's a net revenue zero. What goes out comes back into the state. And indeed, when you think about the multiplier effect, it actually creates more revenue for states and local governments than goes out the door, right?
Correct. And essentially, I mean, by being a tax credit, they have had to already go out and spend the money. So in other words, construct the house, buy all the materials to make it a more energy efficient home. If they're growing up to zero net energy, then they're buying solar on top. Make all of those investments first, then turn around and ask the state for a tax credit back. And so we actually get the dollars coming in first, and then the tax credit goes out afterwards.
Right.
And what's so interesting is that this helps leverage other new dollars to come into the state as well. So, for example, let's say you put solar on a home to get it to zero net energy. Then that would actually give you access to the federal solar market tax credit. So that's going to bring in, so it's a $20,000 system. That's 40%, I believe it's roughly 40% that would be coming back, new dollars, federal dollars coming into the state for that purchase. And so when we're talking about a multiplier effect, I mean, this is a real honest to God multiplier. And that's kind of for your first round. And then there's a second round, where all the folks who are working on the home, doing the building and construction, they will in turn, they get paid a salary. They'll in turn go out with that, being paid that salary and go out and buy the food, clothes, pay the rent. And so that goes through the economy, a second cycle. And the analysis that we came up with essentially comes to it's a big number. But it's $577 million that would be coming in overall spending back into the state. So for $15 million in tax credits, you get a really big bang for the buck coming back.
Well, that's true. And by the way, Ed made a presentation at the Home Builders Association that Alan was also a guest at this past Wednesday. And it was interesting that Peter Merrill, one of our proud members, brought up a point that hadn't really even been taken into account with Ed's economic analysis. And that is the fact that these 5,000 people who may be hired because of this tax credit are very likely people who are now collecting unemployment, perhaps food stamps, other public assistance. And so it's not just their wages that would be spent and help that multiplier effect. This actually stops the potential drain that we are already subsidizing for these unemployed workers. That's huge.
Yeah, it definitely reduces the burden on the state in terms of repayments around unemployment insurance and, and any other, other costs that are currently being borne on the state, say through Medicaid or other things.
Right.
And so, it has that extra positive effect that we wanted to keep conservative numbers. And so we actually don't have those in our numbers, which I think is not the usual case around some of the economic analysis that I've seen.
Yeah,
in the roundhouse.
People like to inflate their the positives and minimize the negatives. Hey, Alan, we've only got about 45 seconds left in this segment. When we come back, I know that the Green Chamber's got a whole host of other things that are really, really important to our local economy and not just the home building industry. So when we come back from this break, we're going to go back into our middle of the show, 12-minute segment, been a nice, healthy segment where we really can delve in some details. So, folks, stay tuned. We are with Alan Oliver, the executive director of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, and we are talking about the legislative priorities that will start on Tuesday next week. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this.
Won't tell you all I know.
Hey, folks, welcome back. This is Kim, your host. This is Green Building Sustainable Development. A couple quick shout outs here. First off, just to remind you that the show is brought to you by the Santa Fe Area Home Builders Association, where I have the great privilege of being their executive officer and during the legislative session, kind of a part-time lobbyist, too. Also, that the show for the last few weeks and for the next few weeks has been sponsored by the Department of Workforce Solutions. And Alan earlier mentioned the fact that ARRA money was very much a part of trying to change the green economy, and that's why they've actually stepped up and helped out with the show, because we've been promoting green education and green trading at Santa Fe Community College, also a recipient of that ARRA money, and very, very appreciative of that generosity. Also, just one last reminder that the show is podcast and live streaming on SantaFe.com. So you go to SantaFe.com and click on the KTRC button, and you can listen to this show, and you can listen to it at your leisure. They keep it up there on the podcast for a couple weeks, and that's a really cool thing. Hey, anyway, folks, we're here with Alan Oliver, Executive Director of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. And Alan wears a lot of hats in terms of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce for at least 10 months out of the year. His primary role is to manage our state organization, recruit sponsors and members at the statewide level. But when the legislature rolls into town up here in Santa Fe, he is all hands on deck at the roundhouse and kind of takes a hiatus from the day-to-day operations of the New Mexico Chamber, because it is, you've got to be there almost 24/7, right, Alan?
Well, it's ideal to be there 24/7, but luckily the legislature is run by humans, and it's a challenging environment, but it's this is where a lot of really good things can happen. Bad things can happen too, but it is where our democracy goes to work.
Well, and it's one of the reasons why it is so, so important, folks, that we really have a good, viable, and robust and informed Santa Fe chapter of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. And, of course, Glenn Schiffbauer is out there beating the streets and trying to get people signed up, paying their dues to help finance all the stuff that we need to do. But even that, beyond that, it's really often just having the bodies who can actually show up and get to these committee meetings. You never know exactly when they're going to be, so you really kind of sometimes have to be on call. You get the tweet or you get the text that says, hey, we need you in half an hour, and getting those people to just stand up in front of those committees, that's where all the activity and the action occurs. That's where the public can actually get in front of their legislators, look them straight in the eye, and tell them how important these things are. I mean, Alan, that really is part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely part of the process. It's probably the single most important part of the process. Because, I mean, let's be frank, the lobbyists are paid to be there, and they will be there 24 hours a set, 24/7, and they will be, and they're going to have a lot to say to each of these legislators on bills that are going to absolutely have an impact on every New Mexican. And so to really assure that legislators hear from actual real honest to God folks, real honest to God small businesses, it's worth the trip. it's worth taking a few hours of your time. Come, go visit with your representative. Make sure they hear from you on the key issue. And we've got a couple that we're shaping. And make sure that they understand how it's going to impact, you know, your small business, your family, your future. And so it's really vital. It's something where it's every, I'm hoping every listener takes a few minutes, goes up and visits. If you don't have the time to go visit, make a call, shoot an email up. They read them. They care. They want to hear from their constituents.
Well, you know, and a lot of these legislators that show up here in Santa Fe, obviously are not from Santa Fe. The whole state is here represented. And a lot of these legislators have somewhat of a cynical, jaundiced view about the denizens of Santa Fe. So, for instance, if you are there and saying I'm from Forest Guardians or the Sierra Club, they kind of know where you're coming from before you get there. But if you say I am a business owner and a member of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, that resonates with everybody, regardless of what part of the state you're from. If you can say I'm a business owner, I pay my taxes, I employ people, and I believe on these progressive issues, it really does make quite a bit of difference, doesn't it, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, it does, especially around, as I'd mentioned before, with the economy where it is right now, they're very keen to hear new ideas, and they're very keen to hear from small businesses. I mean, nobody will forget that 95% of, let's see, I want to make sure I have this right, but I believe it's 95% of the 95% of the businesses in New Mexico are small businesses, and the biggest employer in the state are small businesses. So they have to listen to your audience. They have to listen to small businesses in order to actually figure out how do we steer the economy, off the rocks and back out into and back into port.
And one of the most exciting things that we're going to be proposing in this legislative session is perhaps something that's a new concept to our legislators and maybe even to you as listeners, but it speaks to how you as a business person can actually say, I am legitimately a progressive, green-focused business, and that's something that's around a concept called the Benefit Corporation or B Corp. And Alan, delve into that one, because that was a new concept to me when I heard it about a year ago. And the more I hear about it, the more I think, yeah, this just makes sense. What is a B Corp?
Well, so a benefit corporation, well, there's kind of two sides to it. So a B Corp is essentially a structure, or better to say, a label that businesses who want to hold themselves to higher accountability standards, be it on a social level or environmental level, do. And then they transparently make sure that the public knows that they're holding themselves to these different standards. Benefit corporation is essentially it's the legislative route of this. Essentially, it establishes it in law as a designation. So best way to work through this is kind of through examples. Patagonia, which a lot of folks know is a national company. It's actually based, I believe, in California. But they they are not a pure profit-driven business. They believe very strongly in a certain level of social responsibility and environmental responsibility, and that's actually part of they consider that as part of their bottom line. And so what Benefit Corporation legislation allows them to do is to say that they're not just about profit maximization, but their DNA, the mission of their business, is broader than that. And so that they can have, a broader impact and not have to worry about what current law requires of pure profit maximization no matter what. And so this actually, it does a number of different things. It uses the power of business to do more than just profit maximization so that they can be, more community-based, more supportive of the community in the broader sense. They can help in terms of the environment, being more environmentally responsible in their sourcing practices, their production, their manufacturing. And so it really opens up kind of a whole new power of business, if you will. And then secondarily, and this is something that's been really eye-opening for me, is that there is a lot of investors out there who are looking they're not looking for just, you know, the 12% return or more. They're looking for investing in businesses that share their values and investing in businesses that are going to do have a broader positive impact. And it's last I checked, it's roughly around an $18 billion investment portfolio out there that is focused straight on this type of investing, sustainable investing. And so for those businesses that are moving towards this model, it's a whole big wide world of potential investors. And so that's really attractive because I think New Mexico very clearly has, you know, we're struggling with attracting outside investment. And this is, you know, we should be looking at every opportunity, trying to open every door. And this is a big door that we can open.
Well, you know, it's interesting because some of the things it's not an IRS designation. So this is not to be instead of an S corp or a C corp or an LLC or sole proprietorship. This is really, it's really kind of the state saying, we recognize that there are these definitions and we as a state, having passed a law like this, we'll give it the credence. We'll give it the credibility to say that, yes, the state of New Mexico recognizes that there are B Corps and there are definitions of them, and we support it as a state. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a designation that is set out, and it would actually put us into a good leading group of states. There are 13 states that have passed this. It has been passed in a bipartisan way. With Republican governors, Democratic legislators, and vice versa. It has had very few, you know, thousands of votes in favor of and maybe 100 votes against, and that's after 13 different states.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. We had a guy in that came in to New Mexico to make some testimony to the legislative committees before, and we asked him, well, like, what kind of states? And he mentioned both Louisiana and South Carolina. Republican governors Bobby Jindal and Nikki Haley, fellow speakers at the Republican convention with our own Governor Susana Martinez. So, hey, let's get it on her desk. What's the downside? And Mallard, you got 30 seconds before we go into the next segment. So.
No downside. I would just add Chris Christie in there too.
Yeah, well, there you go. And there's another big Republican for sure. And a good one as far as Republicans go. Yeah. Hey, folks, stay tuned. Of course, I'm kidding, of course. All Republicans are our friends. Everybody's a friend within the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. It is certainly a nonpartisan, bipartisan, any partisan organization for sure. And a B Corp is too. When we come back, folks, we're going to close up the segment with Alan Oliver, the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce Executive Director. So stay tuned. We've got 8.5 minutes left to go. Stay tuned.
It's been a long, long time since I've got you on my mind.
Hey, folks, welcome back. This is Kim, your host, last segment. Stay with us. We got 8.5 more minutes to go, and then you can be turned loose and turn on that football game. We're here with Alan Oliver, Executive Director of the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, and I will also say a great guy and a good friend. Alan, you know, speaking of good friends, nothing gets done in the legislature unless we've got sponsors. And, of course, we mentioned earlier that Peter Wirth is going to be sponsoring the extension of the Sustainable Building Tax Credit. Brian Niegolf introduced the New Mexico Home Buyers Energy Efficiency Tax Credit bill last year. And this year, I think that we might pop that through the Senate first. What's the thinking, and who are we thinking about sponsoring that one?
This is the working operation, but our hope is, we're working with right now Representative Egolf. We're developing our strategy, but the thought is potentially to look at that starting in the Senate. And we're still working on dealing back with making sure our sponsors are all with us on that one.
And so, how about the Benefit Corporation? Who's going to shepherd that?
Benefit Corporation, we have Representative Zachary Cook starting it from the House side, and then Senator Tim Keller, he will be carrying it on the Senate side.
And Representative Cook is an R, and that does speak to its bipartisan nature, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and we've that was very much on purpose, reaching out to him and also reaching out to Senator Keller. We feel like this is a good bipartisan bill. It has been supported in a bipartisan way in all of these different states. And so I really want to keep that track record going.
You know, speaking of our friends who need to introduce things, we couldn't do this show without mentioning the combined reporting with Senator Peter Wirth. He's been at this for 9 years, I think. And, you know, it looks like I'm reading the tea leaves that this is the year that it's going to happen. I was actually reading a quote, I think maybe today in the Albuquerque Journal, maybe it was the New Mexican, the head of the Rio Grande Foundation, which is a relatively conservative think tank here in New Mexico, who pretty much said, you know, if the governor wants to take the corporate tax rate from 7 down to the 4.9 or whatever it is, then we may need to think about actually taxing everybody in our state, not just people who are registered in the state with their businesses, but all of those big national corporations who do business in the state. I was really incredibly pleased to read that. Are you kind of thinking the same thing, that this might be the year?
Some of us actually thought it was last year that was going to be the year. But this, I definitely think, having had some good conversations with a variety of folks, and a kind of broader recognition that that there's an interest in sort of the competitiveness part, and then the fairness part, to both broaden the tax base and you know, bring down the corporate income tax to a reasonable approach. And I think what we've seen, a thing to keep in mind is that I believe we're the last state in the West to do combined reporting, which puts us at a structural disadvantage. And let's also kind of make sure we kind of roll back to the, you know, combined reporting essentially means that, at least my layman's way of explaining it is, that local businesses, they always will have to pay their proportionate taxes, but the out-of-state companies, big box retailers, others, also have to pay a proportionate tax, and they don't get to say, as they currently do, that they, you know, made all their money in a different state and did not make any profit in New Mexico. And so it's just there's a big fairness and a leveling the playing field. Our guys, the local businesses that we represent, don't sit there and say we want a strategic advantage. What they're asking for is a fair playing field.
Well, and that's absolutely just makes sense, doesn't it? You know, and it's interesting because last year when Senator Wirth was trying to get that through, he had to kind of like keep chiseling away at all the people who would actually be included in that kind of a combined reporting. And it finally, when it got to the governor's desk, was just basically big box retail. And to kind of wrap this back around to where we started the show about the home building industry and the overlap with the Green Chamber, I will point out that I have actually spoken to Senator Wirth and said, Senator, you need to get in back into that definition of who should pay the publicly traded production builders in the state of New Mexico. They have captured such a dominant share of the home building industry here in Santa Fe and in Albuquerque and indeed statewide. And they don't pay. They don't pay state taxes. And that's just not fair. It's not fair when a local company is paying 7% on their profits as they are right now, and their competitors who already have a huge competitive advantage with the fact that they can get financed through Wall Street, that they've got this production of scale. I know, Alan, you got to be careful about that because we don't necessarily want to alienate any of other businesses who might want to be Green Chamber members, but I'll just bluntly say it, that the production builders need to pay their fair share.
Bottom line, everybody has to pay their fair share. There's a lot of, you know, if folks were just take a quick look at where the budget dollars are spent, number one place that they're spent is education, number two is Medicaid, and then it goes, and then it cascades from there. If we want to have the schools that our kids deserve, it's not free. And this is, and I've yet to find a business owner who doesn't want their kid to be going to a good school, and to have the proper investment there. And so that requires it requires dollars, but it really mainly requires everybody paying their fair share.
Well, Alan, I think I heard a chuckle out of you when I was bluntly saying that the production builders needed to pay their fair share. And I suspect that's because I've not yet learned the skill of lobbying. And I'm still seeking you as a mentor in these sort of things, to, because you have an ability to read the tea leaves of the political process, certainly much better than me. But sometimes bluntness is okay, right?
Absolutely. I find it's right back at you, learning a whole lot. I can't think of anybody who has a firmer grasp on what's happening in the green building sector than yourself, and it's an important part of our state, and thank you for your guidance.
Well, I'm going to give one back to you, and we heard from Randy Traynor, who's been the New Mexico State Home Builders Association lobbyist last year, and you know, kind of a conservative fellow, and our state association is certainly more conservative than Santa Fe. But Randy made the comment last year after the 30-day session that the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce has done more for the home building industry than many of his typical partners have, and we did more in 30 days than they'd done in 30 years. So I think I'm really pleased to have been able to connect the Green Chamber with the home building industry. To me, they're a perfect fit.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. You know, we're all about trying to find the win-win, you know, again, not left or right, but forward. And we're really pleased to work with Randy. He and the home builders, think too, home builders are great allies and great friends.
Cool. Alan, we got to wrap this up. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show today. And I also want to remind the folks that next week I'm going to have calling in Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, one of the principal economists for the home building industry at a national level. So, Alan, thanks for being there.
My pleasure, Kim. Thanks for having me.
All right. See you next week, folks. We've got some mind up on, so